stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome back to Administrative Static. I'm Janine Yunus, and I'm here with Peggy Little, one of our colleagues at NCLA, and she's going to talk about her big victory in Federalist and Daily Wire versus State Department. We got some excellent news yesterday. So can you maybe give some brief background on the case?
Sure. Happy to.
To remind listeners.
Yes. The Federalist and the Daily Wire brought suit against the State Department represented by NCLA because it was discovered that the State Department had been funding outfits that blacklist conservative media. And it's very obvious that's going on. It was in our complaint that the 10 best sites that were rated by these news outlets were all very mainstream media, and the 10 worst were all, to a point, the conservative media, and Daily Wire and The Federalist were on those lists by organizations, including NewsGuard and Global Disinformation Index, both funded by State Department taxpayer money.
And the sort of crux of the allegation is that this results in the censorship of especially conservative media, the ones that are sort of negatively targeted by the by these companies, by the technology, right? So it's sort of a First Amendment claim, but it's a little bit of a the government is accomplishing this kind of censorship in a roundabout way through these companies.
Yes, and it's a complex kind of censorship. It involves demonetization. In which they work with advertising organizations in order to drive advertising dollars away from these conservative media. You could describe that as stepping on the funding hose for these media organizations. And these same organizations funded by the grants from the State Department also very positively rate more liberal news outlets, and so the effect can be quite dramatic.
Right.
It also legitimizes them. Downgrades them.
So it has advertisers are less inclined to be interested in advertising on those sites, right?
That's true, that's just one aspect of this too. Social media were also contacted by the State Department, so it's a very widespread really unprecedented scheme.
Right. And they sort of claim there's, this is just about reliability. But I remember looking at the list when we first brought this case, and it was like, Huffington Post and, some very obvious.
Vox Media was on the list of the top 10 most reliable.
And then the least, or, I think it was Wall Street, maybe not Wall Street Journal, Federalist.
New York Post,
and Real Clear. Politics was also on the most unreliable, and they're highly regarded.
And they set themselves up to have one side and then the other side. So even if one's unreliable, there's the counter article. So you'd think something would be reliable.
and the whole point is the government should not be telling Americans who is and who is not reliable. The American citizen is the ultimate arbiter of that, and the government can never participate in that kind of rating of news outlets.
How do you deal with the argument that we've dealt with this in Missouri as well. I mean, surely government actors can say things like, the social media sites are not reliable, the information you obtain there isn't, you should instead look at the CDC's website, or you should instead be reading the New York Times or Wall Street Journal. How do you distinguish what's going on here from that kind of thing?
Well, the delightful thing in this case is the State Department has no business doing any of this at all. The State Department is limited to managing foreign affairs. And to the extent it needs to engage in counterterrorism or foreign disinformation activities, it is free to do so. And our lawsuit does not in any way attack that power of the State Department to deal in foreign affairs. What we are challenging in this lawsuit is that they have used their own budgetary funds to deplatform, demonetize, and downgrade domestic American speech and domestic American news media, and that is utterly without, beyond the powers of the State Department to do it at all.
What did the court decide this week?
The court decided two important things. There were some other matters decided, but the first was a motion to dismiss brought by the State Department, claiming there was no viable claim against the State Department, and the judge issued a decision that had a resounding opening statement vindicating the First Amendment as amongst the most precious of rights that has been conferred upon Americans, and he denied the State Department's motion to dismiss almost in its entirety. There was one matter, an APA claim that was dismissed, but all of the important claims, the First Amendment claims, and the claims about whether this agency has the power to engage in such activities at all were left intact.
And the court was deciding four motions, right? Basically, all of which. Well, we'll talk about how the preliminary injunction is probably on hold for a bit, but. So three of the motions were decided in our favor, right? There was the motion the government wanted to change venue to somewhere where presumably they thought they'd get a more favorable court. They wanted to dismiss the case, and then we had moved for a preliminary injunction, so they opposed that.
The injunction has not been decided, but what we did get, which is hugely important, is preliminary expedited discovery. To find out in full what happened here so that a preliminary injunction can be effectively crafted to stop this activity by the State Department. And we prevailed on getting the preliminary discovery, which is a big win.
It is. I mean, it's very rare for a court to do that in a preliminary injunction situation, as I understand
Well, it is, although the standard is not that it's extraordinary relief. You just have to show good cause, and we did, because this is interference with American speech and American press that is ongoing and is suppressing those First Amendment rights, and that is presumed to be irreparable harm under law.
This is also the Eastern District of Texas Federal District Court, which is adjacent to the Western District of Louisiana Federal District Court, where there was expedited discovery in Janine's case and John's case, Missouri v. Biden. So there's something in the water down there that they're a little happier with expedited discovery. I'm all for it. It's
well, I would expand upon that point. I think one of the most gratifying things to read in this complaint, both in the decisions on the dismissal motion and also the expedited discovery, was that the court did refer on more than one occasion to the Missouri versus Biden litigation. And so for NCLA, what we are seeing is our good work in an earlier case that had a lot of similar issues, but also some different ones. This is a different scheme. But we're building on that earlier work and getting good outcomes from courts that are willing to take a hard look at what is going on in the government.
Well, yeah, if you can make your own precedent, might as well.
I think Missouri kind of showed that in some of these situations, we really need the discovery in order to, get an appropriate injunction and understand what's going on, because without discovery, just based on the public statements the government actors had made, we didn't really understand the extent of the censorship. It actually was much more than we had even suspected.
Dared to imagine.
Yeah.
And, they complain about it, but if we didn't get the discovery, the injunctions wouldn't be as narrowly tailored as they are, right?
Right.
So they always complain, oh, this is terrible. But hey, look, you didn't get this kind of injunction because
well,
we got the discovery
thing. Well, of course they think it's terrible. Yeah, they don't
exactly.
Want these emails coming out.
So I have a question. Why did it – where did they want it transferred and why wasn't it transferred?
Okay, well, one of the things I failed to mention earlier is the Daily Wire and Federalist have been joined by the State of Texas. And the State of Texas interest in enforcing its laws regarding House Bill 20 and the social media law that it has passed. And so this case was brought in Texas because Texas is a plaintiff and has alleged harm, and the judge correctly decided that Texas had stated a viable claim and that Texas, of course, has venue in its own courts to bring such an action.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense that a state suing the federal government would sue the federal government in federal courts within that state. I mean, that makes perfect sense. I don't I'm not shocked that, the court denied the transfer of venue request. But I do understand why the State Department would prefer to be in Washington, D.C. But I would just tell the State Department respectfully, if you want to get sued in Washington, D.C., stop sticking your nose into domestic business. Because as soon as you do that, you're subject to suit wherever you stuck your nose.
Exactly what we said. It should come as no surprise to the State Department that when they meddle in domestic news media and in, and also Texas's interest in enforcing its own laws, they can expect to be sued where the damage and the harm took place.
And the court found that all the plaintiffs had standing, too, which was important.
It is important. The court actually, it's a very careful opinion. The judge thoroughly read the papers. He understood the pleadings. It was actually gratifying. And to this, I must give great credit to my colleague, Margo Cleveland, who worked very hard on this case. He really had read the complaint, understood how the parts and the pieces fit together. I should also mention that some of this material are things that came out in the Missouri versus Biden case. So this is a very widespread practice amongst the government in this age of censorship and disinformation. And we were able to build on that. Margo did a terrific job, along with the whole team, putting together a great complaint. And the judge found... I would say he had enough evidence in in his decision that, you know, we might be able to move to a preliminary injunction just based on what we put in the complaint. But it is good and very important for the expedited discovery to take place because understanding fully how widespread this is essential, as John has pointed out, to crafting an effective injunction.
Well, thank you so much, Peggy, and we'll be back with more about this case after the break.
Yeah, and we'll get into it in a little more detail and maybe ask for some predictions.